beginning to look a little more cheerful. Business, they report, is picking up. The pattern is far from uniform, to be sure. But many magazines predict that the advertising they will carry for the first half of 1962 may well be above the levels of the 1961 period, and that the 10-year decline begun when the meteor struck is at an end. A couple of weeks after my discussion with Leonard and Florence, I slid down the ladder into the kitchen module to set up the kitchen for the Monday morning meeting. And yes, since they'd pointed it out, I had paid attention to the duty rosters. Leonard wound up on cleaning or kitchen duty only. Florence had cleaning, laundry, kitchen, and comms, so at least she got to work in her area of specialty. And amazingly, the men never had to make coffee for the meeting. The Christmas decorations that Mission Control had packed were still up, with the silver garland taped in loops to the top of the wall. In the corner, seven bulbs glowed from an electric menorah. It wasn't the same as candles, but I was glad to have it. Parker was already in the kitchen, writing the agenda on one of the whiteboards with his usual crisp, angular strokes. He gave me a guarded nod, then moved on to another perfectly spaced line. I've written on more than a few chalkboards during my career, and his handwriting was shockingly precise. "Why is your handwriting so good?" I opened the cabinet to pull out the pack of ground coffee.
"Test pilot."
He glanced down at the next item on his agenda. "I'm not following."
"After writing reports on a clipboard strapped to my leg while pulling a plane out of a spin?"
He thumped the board with his marker.
"This doesn't move."
"Huh." I dumped the dregs of yesterday's coffee into the reclaimer. "Gotta admit, I never thought about that."
"Well, you don't think..."
"I don't think about most things." I finished with him. Parker looked up from his clipboard with a snort. His dimpled grin flashed for a minute, and I'm almost ashamed of this. I wanted to make him smile again. If I could just figure out how to keep Happy Parker around, the whole trip would be so much easier. Staring at the glow of the menorah candles, I wiped out the inside of the coffee pot. "Say, Parker, I've been wanting to apologize." My back was toward him as I slid the coffee pot back into place. Behind me, the marker squeaked on the board. Of course. Of course, he wasn't even going to respond to that. Sighing, I shook my head and pulled the filter out of the coffee maker. I'm not sure why I tried to make peace with the man.
About?
I turned around fast enough that the Coriolis effect threw my balance off and I had to grab for the counter. Old grounds scattered across the stainless steel and spilled onto the floor. Damn it.
Not an apology.
He glanced up from the clipboard.
Need help?
No, thanks. I'm just an idiot. I tossed the filter in the composting and grabbed one of the rags. But you knew that already.
York.
He sighed and lowered his clipboard.
I think you are many unflattering things, but not an idiot.
At least you're honest. I swiped at the grounds on the floor, folding the cloth over to gather them inside. Belatedly, I realized that, for Parker, that was a compliment. Almost. He didn't think I was an idiot. With another sigh, I sat back on my heels. I'm sorry about your wife. I mean, about the assumptions I made and needling you and everything.
I asked you not to talk about her.
My mouth hung open at the chill in his voice. I know, I'm sorry. I just wanted to apologize. I won't bring her up again. Why did I try? Wadding the cloth up, I scrambled carefully back to my feet. Once the coffee was set up, I would clear out until the meeting started. With a clean corner, I wiped up the grounds on the counter. Behind me, Parker pulled out the bench, its metal feet scraping on the floor of the kitchen. He sighed as he sat down, and the clipboard rattled against the table.
Thank you.
This time I did not turn quickly. I did not turn at all, in fact. I kept my focus on the rag and shook the used grounds into the compost bin. Only after biting the inside of my lip was I able to not cry. God, I hated the fact that I wanted to cry. This man gave me such grief that a little bit of kindness made me tear up. What can I do to make you stop hating me?
I did. For a long time. But I don't hate you. Honest to God, York, I don't hate you.
Folding the dish rag into quarters required my full attention. The rough cotton bumped under my thumbs as I smoothed the corners. You don't like me either.
The feeling is mutual, I'm sure.
Parker cleared his throat.
So, what can I do to make you stop hating me?
Stop being an asshole?
He barked a laugh. Sorry, sweetheart. It's baked in, but I'll try to remember that you're a delicate flower.
That, I slapped the cloth down on the counter and turned. That is the kind of thing that I'm talking about. Parker's mouth hung open. He blinked twice before snapping his jaw shut and trying again.
I'm joking.
It doesn't feel like a joke. He threw his hands into the air.
For the love of God! Your feelings are not my responsibility. I meant it as a joke.
There's nothing funny about telling a woman that she's too delicate to handle something. We get told that all the time by people, by men, who are trying to keep us in our place. It's offensive.
And calling me an asshole isn't.
It is. By this point, my hands had started to shake with anger, but I wasn't joking.
That would require a sense of humor.
Parker grabbed his clipboard and slid off the bench.
Thanks for the apology. I'll treasure it always.
As he stalked back to the whiteboard, I squeezed my eyes shut. God, I really was an idiot. By the time Florence slid down into the kitchen, I had the coffee going and a reasonable facsimile of a calm demeanor. My teammate, on the other hand, was grinning. She whipped her hand away from the ladder and waved a sheaf of papers over her head.
Got the morning paper here?
I can't remember the last time I was happy to see the paper.
Oh, you'll like this one.
She held up her free hand as if framing an imaginary headline.
Front page. Dr. Martin Luther King awarded Nobel Peace Prize.
Mazel tov! I clapped my hands together. I'm so glad they recognized his work.
That's great.
Parker left his seat by the whiteboard and came to stand behind Florence so he could read over her shoulder.
Was he the first?
Florence shook her head, not asking what he meant by first. Heck, even I knew what he meant and was glad he'd asked. I'd wondered, but didn't want to reduce Dr. King to his race. I was curious, though.
Nah, that was Ralph Johnson Bunch.
She handed Parker half the papers.
Elma, you got mail. I swear I didn't read it, but you tell your husband that if he keeps writing notes like this, the steam is going to damage my machine.
And you say you didn't read it. A blush heated my cheeks, but it faded as I took the page from her. She had neatly trimmed the paper so that the garbage was removed. It made sense. But the garbage always contained the best parts of letters from my husband. Still, it was a letter from Nathaniel. I took it to the table and sat down, waiting for the rest of the team.
Dear Elma, I cannot wait to show you our new apartment. As requested, it has green. In fact, it faces onto a courtyard that has apple trees, azaleas, and a privet hedge. Our bedroom is on the first floor, tucked behind the trees, so that we can have the curtains open and still have privacy. I am looking forward to showing you the morning light here.
Florence thought this was steamy? She should see the garbage. Camilla slid down the ladder and into the kitchen, as Terrazas and Rafael jogged in from the tube leading to the gym. With grabby hands like a small child, Camilla staggered toward the counter.
Coffee. Weren't you the one talking about its toxicity?
Florence peered over the rim of her own cup.
Nothing is as toxic as me without coffee.
She poured a steaming cup with a little moan. Parker snorted.
Where's Flannery?
Here.
He dropped down the tube into the kitchen.
Sorry, I was sciencing.
I will admit that English is not my first language, but is that a word?
Terrazas swung a leg over the bench opposite me, folding his long frame to hunch over his cup.
Absolutely.
Leonard made a beeline for the coffee.
I can conjugate it for you.
Parker swung back to the whiteboard and wrote a hasty list next to his agenda.
I science, you science, he, she, it sciences.
The juxtaposition of words on the board made an accidental sentence and a laugh escaped me. Pointing at the list, I read aloud, I science duty rotation, you science Mars, he, she, it sciences waste disposal.
Incorrect, York.
Parker pointed at himself.
I science duty rotation, according to which you science kitchen.
Florence clapped.
I love it when Elma sciences the kitchen. Will you science your chest pie?
I will science the heck out of that. I saluted and a little frisson of pleasure ran up my spine. Am I Southern? Yes, I am. And if someone compliments my chess pie, I will bake them pies until the end of the universe.
Good. Parker grinned. You are also sciencing the calculations for a midpoint course correction. Terrazas and Avellino are sciencing the oxygen units and system checks on the busy bees. Shamoon, you are sciencing the water reclamation here and over on the Pinta.
Parker was grinning as he went down the checklist.
Flannery, you science the waste disposal. Gray sciences laundry and comms.
Funny how a simple word can change your perspective. Sure, Leonard and Florence had mentioned that they got only cleaning duty, but throwing the word science into the mix made it clear that Leonard wasn't doing anything but cleaning. All of his lab work happened on his leisure time. I opened my mouth to point that out, but I could preemptively hear Parker tell me that it was a joke. Coward that I am, I just didn't have the energy to be the focus of his scorn at that moment. Besides, Leonard and Florence had asked me not to try to fix this. But really, it was just cowardice and exhaustion. I closed my mouth and sank a little onto the bench. Across the table, Rafael nudged Terrazas, who straightened and cleared his throat.
Can I swap with Leonard on the oxygen units?
He tapped his nose.
Got a sinus thing. Don't want to put a mask on.
Parker lowered his clipboard.
And that won't be a problem with the busy bee? You'll be in zero G.
Terrazas darted a look at Camilla, who was still hunched over her coffee.
Well, it's just that Leonard trained on the oxygen units and not on the busy bees, so swapping that would be easier. I mean, if Leonard doesn't mind.
Fine by me.
Leonard gave a restrained nod that only barely hid his grin. Parker looked between the three men and then back down at his clipboard. He cleared his throat.
No.
He set the clipboard aside and leaned forward to rest his weight on the table.
Because I want them to forget that Flannery is on the ship until we get to Mars because I need him there. Anything goes wrong and his fingerprints are on it? What do you think Mission Control will do with that?
Come on.
Terrazas shook his head.
We all make mistakes.
The grin had drained out of Leonard's face along with seemingly all the joy in the room.
I don't get to make any.
He sighed.
I'll stick with waste disposal.
Parker pushed back up and shook his head.
You've got better chops with the oxygen systems than Terrazas, and I know it.
He sighed and shoved his hand over his close-cropped hair, coming to a rest with his palm covering the bald spot in back.
But I'm sorry. Mission Control's duty roster stands.
23.
Halfway to Mars. Special to the National Times. March 28th, 1963. Even in an era when technical and scientific wonders crowd close on one another, there was a special quality to yesterday's teletype from the first Mars expedition as it sped through the void roughly halfway to our sister planet. These astronauts are pioneers voyaging in a realm where, so far as men know, there has never been life of any kind. The human organism is an evolutionary product that has been molded over millions of years by the special conditions of this planet. The force of gravity, the constitution of the atmosphere, the nature of the Earth's seas and lands. But in space, gravity is neutralized to produce what is called weightlessness, and there is no oxygen to breathe, no land to walk on, no water to swim in. Yet, in this bizarre environment, astronauts can live and function because their spaceship is a cocoon that reproduces the essential elements of this planet's ambience. The day will come, and many younger people now alive may well live to see it, when space liners will take off daily for Mars as routinely as airplanes now depart for Chicago or London or Tokyo. When that time comes, no doubt, human beings will be as blasé about that miracle as they are now about crossing the Atlantic overnight. But for the moment, while the first trans-Mars crossing is still in progress, and courageous men are doing and seeing things no humans have done or seen before, one must be dull indeed not to be overcome by a sense of wonder.
Strapped into my seat on the bridge, I stared out at space as if the marker for the halfway point would be visible. It seemed as if being 160 days away from both Earth and Mars ought to come with a golden gateway or some other extravagant signal. Instead, what I had was a sheet of printouts from Earth and a sextant. Parker appeared to be calibrating his right-hand controller, methodically moving it through its range of motion, his strong jaw clenching as he worked.
I need those set points to update our navigation state.
Give me a second to make a Trunnion bias determination. Over the past 3 months, the tension between us had faded to low-level background radiation, which somehow vanished when we were working. I'll take the small blessings. I sighted my sextant on the stars that Mission Control had specified. The individual lights in the sky had become familiar over the course of the trip. I no longer needed to arc to Arcturus or speed on to Spica. The blue-white of Spica shone with an unblinking gaze at me. Noting the angle, I moved the trunnion off a couple of degrees and came back to take a second reading. I needed two consecutive measurements that were within 0.003 degrees. Then I referred to the printout that Mission Control had sent up. Their predicted numbers matched mine. By the numbers, we're looking for roll 8.37, pitch 61.33, and yaw 339.87. Confirmed. Roll 8.37, pitch 61.33, and yaw 339.87. He paused for a moment in the ritual call and response. A moment later, Florence's voice crackled over the intercom from the comm module.
Confirmed. Roll 8.37, pitch 61.33, and yaw 339.87.
She was copying everything down on the teletype and sending the numbers back to Earth. The delay meant we were running more or less on our own, but Mission Control still wanted to double-check everything. Barker continued setting up the ship for the burn.
Go ahead and give me the full correction, York.
Okay. SPS/GNN 63059 plus 0.97 minus 0.20. Even as I was rattling off a string of numbers and phrases, a part of my brain was laughing at what gobbledygook it sounded like. GET ignition 026-4457.92 plus 0011.8 minus 0000.3 plus 0017.7 roll 277-355-015 Delta VT 0021.3003-0016.8. My job was to figure out the Niña's velocities as well as its local vertical and horizontal position with respect to Earth. Later in the voyage, I would start using Mars as our reference point. Parker and Terrazas alternated between jotting down numbers on their own sheets and flipping switches on the control panel. Florence repeated that long string back. I paused to let them all catch up with me. As I did, the line from the Pinta lit up with a question from their navcomp desk. Heidi's Swiss-German accent crackled across space.
Niña, what stars did you use?
For the GDC line? Vega and Deneb? You?
That's what Mission Control recommended, but I'm having trouble getting a clean reading.
I nodded, suddenly grateful that I had struggled so much and so recently with sighting on starfields, so I could help her out. What's your shaft and trunnion reading?
Shaft, 331.2, and trunnion, 35.85. I see Vega, but Deneb is not showing up in my sights.
I leaned forward and looked out the window toward the Pinta. The other ship caught the thin light of the sun and shimmered against a backdrop of stars. Like us, their command module faced inward, toward us, and with a view of the Santa Maria, where she sailed between and behind us. Their problem was immediately obvious, but it was also clear why it wouldn't be to them. Looks like y'all need to roll or sight on different stars. I think the Santa Maria is in your way. A moment later, Heidi came back on the comm with the sort of steady calm that betrays an astronaut who has just been cursing off mic.
Thank you, Niña. I did not see her.
From your angle, you've only got the shade side of her, practically invisible. To my side, I could feel Parker and Terrazas watching me. Neither of them interrupted as I talked with Heidi, but Parker's fingers flexed as if he were itching to do the next thing. And I owed him more numbers. Turning off my mic, I turned back to them. Roll a line 007-144-068. As he worked, Parker glanced out the window.
Looks like our heads will be pointed roughly toward Earth on this burn.
Now that Parker had everything ready, we had to wait. Despite the time delay, Mission Control had to confirm my numbers, and only then could Parker fire the engines. Over on the Pinta, they'd be waiting for the same thing, but with a different Capcom and a different set of computers. Who would be on duty in Mission Control now? There had to be a team of computers going over the calculations. Maybe Katherine Johnson? And perhaps my old deskmate, Basira? Helen was still in the astronaut corps, so she wouldn't be doing the math for this, though she might be in Mission Control watching. Or maybe she was avoiding news of us. Nathaniel would be there. I tilted my head toward the window as if that would allow me to see him somehow. The austere sky with its unblinking stars stared back. Florence's voice floated into the command module.
Mission Control says, Nina, you are go for mid-course correction burn. Confirmed go and Godspeed.
Parker nodded, settling his hands on the controls. He blew out a quick breath, almost as if he were nervous, and my breath caught in anticipation as he did.
Terrazas, let the crew know that we've got a 21-second burn coming up.
Roger.
Terrazas picked up the mic, and his voice suddenly went all Buck Rogers.
Ladies and gentlemen, in this thrilling installment, Captain Stetson Parker and his intrepid crew brace themselves for a 21-second burn. The burning question is, did the whole crew secure themselves when ordered, or were some of them scrambling even as his finger inched closer to the ignition? Closer. Closer.
Cajasso.
Shaking his head but grinning, Parker said,
On my mark. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, mark.
The Niña shuddered. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The low roar of the engines vibrated through the metal and plastic and fiberglass of the ship. 10, 11, 12, 13. The stars wheeled to the side in time with our prescribed roll, and I clenched my pencil until its hexagonal edges bit into my knuckles. 16, 17. My seat slapped against my rump as the main engines pushed us forward. 18, 19, 20, 21. The silence hit as the engines cut off, and I was flung against my shoulder straps. Parker pulled his hands away from the controls.
Report.
Terrazas looked at the velocity and relative position gauges amid a great wall of instrumentation.
Right on target.
With a sigh, Parker tilted his head back and smiled.
Look up.
Above our heads, a tiny blue pea floated in a sea of ink. And somewhere on that little ball, my husband would have to wait another 15 minutes to know that everything was okay. You'd think that passing the halfway point would bring about some change on the ship, but we just went about our work. Duty rotation shifted us to different responsibilities, but the sky outside continued to be the same inky black. I had pulled my favorite duty rotation, the garden module, this week. Oh, I liked kitchen duty. But being in the green and humid air of the garden module made tension bleed out of my veins. Leaning over one of the radish beds, I pulled a small red globe from the dirt. Soil granules clung to the thready white roots and raised a scent of earth. I tapped the radish to release the dirt back into the bed. Once I would have objected to the bits that got caught under my fingernails and turned the tips of my fingers dark. Camilla had her feet up on the bench in the middle of the module with a book in her lap.
Can I borrow you after this?
Sure. For what?
I think it's time to press the raisins, and I want a second opinion.
She stretched, lifting her arms over her head.
You've actually made this stuff before.
I shook a finger, coated with dirt.
Uh-uh. Myrtle made the raisin wine. I just sampled her wares.
Still, you've got the closest thing to direct experience.
I should never have told you that story. I wrinkled my nose against the memory of the tart, harsh liquor. Myrtle's raisin wine wasn't good. It was just alcohol. And you don't drink.
This is medicinal. And I have a secret weapon that she did not.
I laid another radish in the basket and paused to look at Camilla. Her face had a smug, beatific expression, her lips pressed together, and her brows raised. Oh?
I have a lab, and specifically, I have a still.
So? You're going to make it worse by concentrating it? The brandy that they'd made from the raisin wine on the moon had been challenging. Camilla shook her head, shutting her book and setting her feet on the ground.
I can make vodka. And there are juniper berries in the spice drawer. And citrus.
I stared at her, still not seeing what she was getting at.
I can make gin.
Laughter bubbled out of me. Gin? Did we have any olives on the ship?
You are a genius and what the hell, York?
Florence stalked into the garden module with a wad of papers in her grip.
I had started to like you. I almost felt sorry for you, you piece of shit.
I dropped the radish, which bounced off the edge of the raised bed and rolled down the aisle. My heart tightened.
What? This.
She slapped the paper down on the radish bed, crushing some of the leafy greens. Camilla jumped to her feet.
Hey, watch it.
Of course. She was worried about the radishes, but didn't defend me at all. I swallowed, trying to clear my throat so I could breathe. Florence stood too close, jaw clenched so hard that it looked like it hurt. Her gaze had the narrow focus of a laser.
3.14159.
I dragged my gaze down to the papers that she'd carried in, so I didn't have to look that hatred in the face. It was a letter from Nathaniel. My ribcage locked around my lungs. Pencil marks marched above the lines of garbage. She'd decoded it.
2653589 7.
I coughed, trying to break the cage that held my breath. It only drove the air out, and I wheezed as I inhaled. Camilla stepped past Florence and grabbed my arm.
Elma, breathe. Slow breath. Count it. 1, 2, 3, and hold.
Oh, don't baby her.
Florence jabbed the paper.
She's been spying on us. Sending coded messages.
Camilla snorted.
Please. She's telling them that Parker can't be trusted in the kitchen.
Snatching the paper up, Florence read,
I understand your concerns about the duty rosters, but Mission Control has reasons for making the assignments that they do. You don't realize how bad it is here. I'm glad of that, but we're sending the rosiest possible news to keep morale up. Trust me when I say...
I snatched the papers out of her hands. They rattled as I hugged them to my chest.
That's private. What the hell are you actually doing on this mission?
Florence took a step toward me, forcing me back. Camilla let go of my arm, but her hand was still outstretched as if she were holding a ghost. Through the papers, my heart stuttered and thumped against my chest. I shook my head.
It's just so we can... He's my husband. I miss him, that's all. He's the lead engineer.
Florence buried her fingers in the dirt.
You think you can just tell him about our fights and the way we chafe at orders, and that's not going to get back to someone?
It's not... For the first time in my life, I was relieved that someone knew about the anxiety. It gave me an angle from which to explain.
It's the anxiety. He's a safety valve. Nothing else. Thought you said that wasn't a problem anymore. Which is it, York? Either you are perfectly healthy and send encoded messages for no reason at all, or you are a neurotic mess clinging to a safety blanket.
My knees shook hard enough that I had to grab the edge of a bed to steady myself. I looked to Camilla, hoping she could help explain, but her brows were drawn down and together. She stared at me as if we'd never met before. I shook my head.
Mission Control didn't send me. I mean, they did, but I'm not spying. Nathaniel isn't breaking any confidences. Oh, yeah?
Florence pulled her hand out of the dirt and folded her arms over her chest, leaving a smear of earth against the blue of her flight suit.
Then why are they censoring our news now?
What are you talking about?
Rosiest possible news? You haven't noticed that all the news we're getting is sunshine and light? You think that's a coincidence?
I don't... I looked down at the papers clutched against my chest.
I don't know.
But I did. Because, of course, Nathaniel would try to change things. Hadn't he told me before we left that he would sacrifice everyone on this ship to keep me safe? And hadn't I said that tempers were high? Hadn't I said that I almost wished they wouldn't send us letters from home? He wouldn't share things told in confidence. But he would still try to help, the same way I had, and made everything worse. 24.
April 9th, 1963. Dear Alma, I'm sorry that all of this is going to be in the clear, as they say. I've just had a very interesting meeting with Director Clemens in which he gently suggested that this would be for the best. There's not much to say about that, I suppose. The apartment is pleasant enough when I'm there. Nicole is back from the moon for a couple of months and has come by to help with furnishing it. She and Myrtle seem determined to make certain that it will be cozy for you when you get home. I think they are worried that I will become too set in my bachelor ways. Myrtle chided me, you can imagine this, for the state of the pantry. Honestly, though, you know that dry toast is usually all I eat in the morning. Everyone seems very determined to take care of me while you are away. Herschel tried to get me to come out for Passover, but I couldn't manage it, so he's coming here, ostensibly to help me prepare for Thomas's visit. I told him that wasn't necessary, but family will be family, eh? I trust all is going well. With all my love, Nathaniel.
I had not realized how vital the private messages were until we could no longer send them. Something was not right, and Nathaniel wasn't saying what it was. He and Herschel got along well, but there was no reason my brother would be coming out now, especially not if it meant being away from his family during Passover. Parker cleared his throat.
Do you have a reply you want to send?
I did not throw the paper at him. I did not roll my eyes. I did not huff. I set the paper down on the table in the kitchen and tried to deliver one of my mom's death stares. Is this really necessary? Mission Control will look over everything I send. If there's a code, they'll spot it first.
Following orders.
Parker held his hands up.
Promise. I can have Gray send it if you'd prefer.
She hates me. He shrugged. Of course it was no skin off his back. People hating me probably seemed natural to Parker.
Right now, she and I are the only ones authorized to use the teletype. Which of us is going to bug you less?
Beneath the table, I had my hands wadded into balls in my lap. My nails bit into my palms. The injustice of this situation left me shaking with the suppressed urge to scream. Being able to express myself freely made me a healthier and more productive team member. That would go for any of us. And they were mad because I was talking with my husband about... what? Sex? Anxiety? But none of that would be seen as sufficient justification. I tried to take a deep breath, but my ribcage caught and left me short. Prying my hands open, I pressed them flat on my lap. I would prefer it if you sent the message. Parker grunted. Brows going up in surprise. That was fair. I was surprised myself. I trust you not to repeat anything. That realization made me shift on my seat. Anything that was public knowledge, Parker would use against me. But he had never told anyone about my anxiety issues, even when he was trying to keep women out of the space program. With a nod, he slid his clipboard over to me.
I'll shred it after I send it. Won't help with Mission Control knowing, but at least you'll have some privacy on the ship.
Thank you. I took the clipboard and picked up the mechanical pencil tethered to it. Rolling the smooth barrel under my fingers, I bent my head to the page. Dear Nathaniel, I'm sorry to have caused you trouble. I'm glad, though, that Myrtle and Nicole are helping with the apartment, particularly with the pantry. And it's good that you won't be alone for Passover. I know you don't have much of an appetite in the morning, but to quote every doctor, including my mother, it's the most important meal of the day. I don't expect I'll be able to change your habits from here, but it's still worth a try. I hope you didn't expect me to defend the habit. Mama always said... I broke off. Pencil stuck on the page. Mama had always said he'd make himself sick that way. And the way he overworked meant he sometimes forgot to eat unless he was reminded. Who would stop him and make him go home? Or eat? Well, I guess Myrtle and Nicole were trying. The fact that Herschel was coming out to visit struck me with a more sinister force, though. I bit my lower lip, trying to figure out how to ask. Mom always said that you would end up with an ulcer if you didn't take better care of yourself. It would be a shame if Herschel came out to find you suffering from that. I remember how she would make you drink a glass of milk with your toast in the morning. Raise a glass for me? The powdered milk we have on the ship is nothing like fresh. Mr. Yoder, at the Amish market has farm-fresh milk that I dream about sometimes. Lately, most of my dreams seem to be vivid memories of Earth, but nothing dramatic. Simple things like drinking a glass of milk, or standing on the street corner as the trolley comes down the lane, or the scent of your aftershave. I stopped again. If I continued to talk about his aftershave, it would lead me to writing about how his skin was smooth and soft after he shaved, and the warm line of his jaw when I nuzzled his neck. None of that was something that I could put into a letter that anyone might read. I dreamt about him in more carnal ways sometimes. But this recitation of banal dreams was as close as I could come to reassuring him that I was all right. Not perfect. Angry, frustrated, embarrassed. Yes, all of that. But I was weathering it better than I thought I would. On the other hand, anger had always given me a route out of the anxiety. I've discovered that I can make a fairly decent chocolate chess pie even without real eggs. Lemon meringue is out of the question, though. Maybe on the next mission they can send along some chickens. With love, Elma. I must have sighed when I finished, because Parker looked up from the book he was reading, something in French, and raised an eyebrow.
You all right?
I nearly snapped at him. I even inhaled, about to say something about how I was surprised he cared. But I stopped. He hadn't, in fact, rubbed my nose in this. Frustrated.
I can imagine.
He closed the book and sat forward, resting his elbows on the table.
For what it's worth. I think anyone who thought of it would have tried to set up something similar.
The topic froze my tongue. Was it all right for me to respond to that? I wet my lips and picked the safest part of it to answer. Maybe we should suggest that Mission Control give married couples a sanctioned encryption system on long trips. Parker pursed his lips and nodded.
I'll suggest that in my next report.
Then why won't you let me write to Nathaniel directly? Mission Control will still get to read it before he does.
Because, believe it or not, I follow orders, even when I don't agree with them. It's my job.
You broke the rules to let Camilla and me go over to the Pinta.
That was...
Parker ran his hands through his thinning hair.
Look, chances are this is going to blow over pretty fast. Just keep your head down for a couple of weeks, and I bet they'll relax the teletype rules.
The same way they relax the laundry rules? I slid the clipboard over to him.
What do you mean?
Just that they're still only assigning laundry to the women. He rolled his eyes.
York, that's just about utilizing an area of expertise. Most men haven't done laundry at all, much less as often as women.
Are you saying that people who can operate a state-of-the-art aircraft can't be trained to empty a dryer filter? I rubbed my face. It seemed like I managed to wind up in a fight with Parker no matter what the topic was. Sorry, I'm just a little wrung out. He studied me for a moment, blue eyes moving as if he were doing a pre-flight check. Finally, he leaned forward and took the clipboard back.
I'll make a note about laundry rotation in my report.
The bitterness in my voice was practically a real taste. Thanks.
Well, on that topic, at least you aren't the only one complaining.
Parker pushed back his chair and stood.
I'll get this sent. You can use the time to catch up on your duties.
Yes, sir. What I really wanted to do was to crawl into my sleeping bag in crew quarters and not climb out again until we reached Mars. But besides that, I was fine.
York.
Parker stood at the bottom of the ladder, staring at the letter I had written. I wanted to rip it out of his hands.
I'm going to rotate you onto kitchen duty tonight. For next week, too.
Pardon? It was a Tuesday. Duty rosters changed on Mondays, and I had been on cleaning and sanitation this week.
Areas of expertise.
He tapped the clipboard.
Who else on the crew can prepare a Seder?
I was so shocked that I couldn't form a sentence before Parker vanished up the ladder. The man baffled me. Why is this night different from all other nights? Just this once, I wouldn't question. About 2 weeks after Passover, I secured the hatch to the Busy Bee for Camilla's biweekly trip over to the Pinta, the door cutting off the constant hum of the Niña. I kicked off and floated up to the pilot's chair. The raw metal of the Niña's sides filled the viewport. The angle of the ship since our last burn let sunlight sneak around the edges of the busy bee to polish the raw metal into sterling. Buckled in? I swung into the pilot seat and grabbed my straps.
Ready?
Camilla nodded and then cleared her throat.
So? How are you?
Fine, thanks. And you? Her inflection had meant it to be a larger question, but I kept it to the safest corridor. Nina, busy bee, am I clear for release? Terrazas answered me.
Confirmed, busy bee. Nothing is blocking your path.
Releasing grapple. I flipped the switch that withdrew the grapple from the airlock of the Nina. With a low chunk, we drifted away from the larger ship. I let us get about 2 meters out before I fired the retro rockets to push farther back. As soon as I had enough distance, I'd turn the busy bee and fly her over to the Pinta.
Safe travels, busy bee. Nina out.
With a click, the buzz of Terrazas' mic went quiet. Camilla cleared her throat again.
Since you won't come visit me in the medical module, I have to ask here. And don't give me more social noise. How are you?
With the early moon missions, we'd had flight surgeons on Earth who we talked to about health matters. They were a lot easier to dodge than a doctor who was on the ship with us. How am I? I'm flying a ship in outer space. I tapped the retro rockets, and the tiny amount of thrust shoved us into our shoulder harnesses. This was not a conversation I wanted to have at any time, but while in flight was perhaps the least desirable. No, that wasn't true. At dinner would be the worst. But Camilla was just trying to do her job. I'm upset and frustrated, but not fragile.
That's good.
Camilla shifted in her seat to face me.
What does it look like when you're fragile?
My teeth ground together almost of their own will. Difficulty sleeping, nausea, sweats. The gap between the busy bee and the Nina grew until long shadows and harsh white light bathed the side of the larger ship. The trip over to the Pinta took about 20 minutes when all was said and done. It was going to be a long 20 minutes.
When was the last time you had those symptoms?
If I were being completely honest, I was having trouble sleeping now, but only on some nights. And I wasn't having nightmares, just trouble securing the engine of my brain. It rattled around in my head with random thoughts pulling it one way and then another. It's been a while.
Does that mean before or after we left Earth?
After. But only once. I considered the fact that I was answering her questions to be a victory of sorts.
Did I resent them?
Yes, very much. But I wasn't foolish enough to think that she would believe me if I lied. Once I would have. But we lived in quarters too close for little changes of behavior to be ignored. Heck, even my dense old-fashioned self was pretty sure that Terrazas and Hafael were involved. Honestly, Camilla, I'm all right. Not wonderful, but it's manageable.
Tell you what. I'll believe you if you promise to come by the med mod so I can do some simple stress tests.
She cocked her head to the side.
Parker is worried about you.
My laugh bounced off the viewport like a rock. Oh, well, if Parker is worried. On the other hand, he'd arranged it so I could host a Seder. So maybe he was. The Seder helped.
Good. Good. I'm glad to hear it.
Belatedly, I realized that I had no idea what holy days Camilla was missing up here. What about you? What would help you? Any observances? She shook her head.
Wait. Actually, yes. Would you call me Cam instead of Camilla?
Cam, confirmed. Is there anything?
Don't think I haven't noticed that you changed the topic.
I sat forward, my attention caught by a spray of white down near the fuel cells. What is that?
Elmer.
Cam followed my gaze and gave a sharp intake of breath. Something was venting from the side of the Nina in a wide cone of mist. It froze in the vacuum of space and drifted back toward us like snowfall. I slapped the mic on the busy bee's comm. Nina, busy bee. Something is venting from the port side by the fuel cells. I'm swinging over for a closer look.
Busy bee, Nina. What sort of venting?
I guarantee that Terrazas had just swung into high alert. But his voice remained steady. A white plume from what looks like a single source. Give me a second to get closer. I nudged the busy bee forward with a gentle tap of the thrusters. When I got to the fuel cells, I kept well back from the mist as I swung the ship so the viewport pointed straight at the venting column. Cam leaned against her shoulder straps, trying to see better, as did I. It took a little attention to hold us steady in relation to the Nina, but not so much that I couldn't report. Nina, busy bee. Looks like it's originating from a small puncture. Small enough that I can't actually see the hole from here.
Copy that, busy bee.
Parker answered. Terrazas must have called him the moment we registered the problem.
I've got Avellino headed down to look at the gauges and see what we're losing.
I shifted our orientation to the ship so that I was looking transversely across it from the front, hoping that it would give me a view of what was venting. We could be looking at water from the fuel cells, oxygen from that module, or coolant. None of those were good options. A crosshatch of tubes wrapped the fuel cells to keep them cool when they were being hit by direct sunlight. The venting plume began as a whisker of white in the joint of one of the tubes, which I followed back to its source system. Oh, hell and damnation. It's the coolant system? We've got an ammonia leak. 25.
Hurricane time stirs Floridians. Weather Bureau preparing with help of Lunetta. By R. Hart Phillips. Special to the National Times. Miami, Florida, May 7th, 1963. A strong weather disturbance last week near the French Antilles, 1,500 miles from Miami, brought the attention of the people of Florida once again to the operations of the United States Weather Bureau in watching for hurricanes. In conjunction with the observatory on the space station Lunetta, the forecasters are able to accurately predict and monitor the behavior of this unusually early hurricane.
No one panicked. That was the beautiful thing about working with astronauts and for the IAC. We had spent so much time in simulations learning to work the problem that the moment one appeared, all the interpersonal stuff just dropped away. I sat at the kitchen table, paper and pencils ready, with a stack of reference books piled in front of me. Raphael, Leonard, and Parker stood at the whiteboard with a diagram of the coolant system taped to the board and notes scrawled alongside it. In the comm module, Florence listened to us over the intercom, transcribing the conversations from Mission Control and reporting back on what they said. She also kept the lines open to the Pinta, where our counterparts listened in. Terrazas sat in the command module in case we needed to roll the ship in or out of sunlight. And Cam prepped a set of EVA suits. Fortunately, we kept the Mars expedition ships at 4.9 PSI, just like the Moon colony, and our EVA suits, so our spacewalkers wouldn't have to spend hours decompressing.
I think we'll need to replace that section of pipe.
Raphael pointed at the spot where I'd seen the leak.
Patching it is going to be unreliable at these temperatures.
Leonard nodded, then tapped the same section of the diagram.
But as a stopgap measure, that might be preferable until we know specifically what the problem is. If it's a puncture from a micrometeorite, that's a different issue than a material failure.
Different how?
Parker hadn't spoken in a while, letting the two scientists hash things out.
A micrometeorite is a one-shot deal. Sure, we might get hit again, but it's random chance. A material failure is likely to occur again in the same way and points to a larger systemic problem.
The words, larger systemic problem, sent a chill down my neck. If we had a failure point in the coolant system, we would probably have to scrap the mission and limp home. Only, from where we were, we might have to keep going to Mars to slingshot home anyway. I hissed and started scribbling down notes to work those calculations in case they asked.
What is it, York?
Parker's ears were annoyingly astute for a man who'd spent his life around airplanes and rockets. Just working the worst-case scenario of needing to scrub? I looked up from my paper, even though my equations were still half-formed. Slingshot. He gave one quick nod to indicate that he understood. We'd worked that scenario in more than one simulation.
Pinta, Nina, your systems all still look good?
Affirmative.
Binkowski's voice crackled over the ship-to-ship line.
My vote is for the micrometeorite scenario.
The Pinta had rotated to aim its telescope at us, but really they couldn't see any more than I had. It was all guesswork until we got someone out there for an in-person look.
Prep for both.
Parker studied the board with his hands on his hips.
Avelino, you get the material together that you need to replace the pipe. Flannery, I want you to prep a patch in case you get out there and find something unexpected. Gray, tell Mission Control that we're planning an emergency EVA.
Been typing as you talk.
Her snort popped in the microphone.
Can't believe I got a PhD to do transcription.
And laundry. Parker grinned at the speaker. Let me know as soon as they reply.
Do you think everyone but you is an idiot?
Yep.
Parker turned to face me.
York, prep a flight plan in case of worst-case scenario.
I could have made a joke here, but we were on the clock, so I just nodded and kept working. It was fine that I could feel my way through calculations, but for this, I wanted the comfort of warm, solid numbers on the page. On Earth, they would be about 15 minutes behind us. By now, Nathaniel would be on the floor of Mission Control, working with his team on solutions. He'd have his pencil gripped tight in one hand, shirt sleeves rolled up to his elbow. The cloud of Clemens's cigar smoke would billow around my husband as he paced, working the problem at their end. I kept my pencil moving across the page, working course corrections, and could almost imagine that he was pacing behind me. The places our minds go for comfort are odd sometimes.
Got an answer.
Behind Florence's voice, the teletype rattled with commands.
Ready?
I looked up from the page as if I could see her. At some point, while I'd been working, Leonard and Raphael had left the room, leaving just me and Parker. He stood at parade rest, watching the speaker.
Go ahead.
Mobianski suggests an EVA with two primary goals. To diagnose the cause of the rupture and, if possible, to patch it. If that isn't possible, then the spacewalkers should attempt to replace the failed section. We want to limit the EVA span, hence attempting to patch first.
I frowned, listening to her. Clarence, Bubbles, Bobianski, was Nathaniel's assistant. Why wasn't Nathaniel the one answering? I mean, I know that Clemens didn't want him to work my flights, but this was different. This was his design, and he was still the lead engineer.
Well, that's what we'd settled on, so that's reassuring.
Parker wheeled around to grab his clipboard. I'll tell Avelino and Flannery to suit up.
Better hold on that. I'm not finished reading.
Parker cocked an eyebrow at that, as if Florence could see him.
Go on.
Mission Control says that Raphael and Terrazas should do the EVA. They want Cam standing by on the med mod, you on flight, with Leonard and Elma to help them suit up.
What does Nathaniel say? The question was out of my mouth before I had a chance to register that it wasn't a good idea. Mission Control sent up the orders through the Capcom, and second-guessing them was just going to annoy everyone. Sorry, never mind.
No.
Parker turned and looked at me, his free hand resting on one hip. The other drummed the clipboard against his thigh in an uneven tattoo.
Flannery should be going out, not Terrazas. Ask them for clarification on that staffing choice, and tell them I want Dr. York's opinion specifically. Also tell them that Flannery has more experience with EVAs and adhesives than Terrazas, and my opinion is that he should be the one to go.
That was the thing about communicating with a time lag. You had to include everything you could think of, because the delay meant that any sort of back and forth was useless.
Ah, hell. Parker shook his head. I'll come up and send it myself. It'll be faster.
Glad you realized that. Come on up.
He headed out of the kitchen and left me alone with my numbers. Cam walked into the kitchen with her hands shoved in her doctor's coat.
How are the numbers going?
Just about finished double-checking them. I ran my pencil down the long equations that described the path to Mars and back to Earth. Buck Rogers would have been able to just reverse course. But real gravity meant that the fastest return would be a slingshot around the planet. The problem was with how long it would take.
Coffee?
She asked. Thanks. Even at best rate of return, we were still close to a year from home. Scrubbing was a worst-case scenario, but if the cooling system failed, we'd have to move over to the Pinta and abandon the Niña. And if anything went wrong with the Pinta, we wouldn't have any redundancy to save us. The Santa Maria was filled with things for the surface of Mars and had no living quarters. Maybe Raphael and Mission Control could figure out a way to keep Niña limping along so we could at least use her for storage. Cam set the steaming cup of coffee in front of me with a clatter of plastic on metal. It smelled deceptively good, with all the rich bitterness you could want.
I pulled the cup closer to myself, enjoying the aroma.
Elma, Parker asked me to come talk to you.
Cam turned her own mug in her hands. I lifted my gaze from the equations to her face. She had a line between her brows, and her eyes were tight with concern. I set my pencil down. About?
First, I want you to know that everything is all right.
Her lips pressed together.
But Mission Control says that Nathaniel is in the hospital. He had an ulcer and ignored it, and they had to do surgery. He's fine. He's just taking some time off from work, as he should. But he's fine. 2, 3, 5, 7, 11, 13, 17, 23. Elma, do you hear me? He's fine.
He is such a man! His last letters suddenly made sense. I now understood why Herschel had come out, why Nicole and Myrtle had been restocking his pantry, why he hadn't been home. Why do you know?
Because Parker asked Mission Control about Nathaniel, and they sent this answer back with, I should add, instructions not to tell you.
Cam kept her hands loosely folded around her mug. Of course they did. Beneath my flight suit, my arms were tight with the effort of not slapping the table. 29, 31, 37, 41, 43. I swallowed hard, trying to keep my voice calm and level. I'm surprised Parker did it anyway. Cam lifted one hand and waggled a finger.
Mm-mm. Parker did not disobey an order. He most definitely did not tell you.
I snorted, which my mother would have been mortified by. Well, I won't thank him then. Sliding my hands off the table, I tried to keep my spine straight, when what I wanted to do was lean forward and hide my head in my arms.
He should have told me.
Nathaniel, I mean.
Why? What could you have done from here?
I'm his wife. Under the table, I pressed my hands flat against my knees. If I had been home, I would have noticed that he wasn't eating. In fact, he would have been eating regular meals. And I certainly wouldn't have let it get so bad that he needed surgery. I can nag him from anywhere in the galaxy.
Well, he's fine. He's supposed to be back at work in another week or so, on half days for a bit.
She reached across the table for me, one strand of her dark hair falling forward over her brow.
Do you need anything?
From Cam, or rather, from Cam to me, that meant a milltown. And oh God, yes, I wanted that comforting cotton batting to muffle the anxiety that was swarming under my skin. Wetting my lips, I let out a breath as slowly as I could. No. It slows down the numbers. I put a hand on the equations I'd been working on. I can't be slow now. And I'm fine. Thank you. But I'm fine. Sometime during hour two of the EVA, after Terrazas and Raphael had gotten the lights set up so they could see the breach, but before they'd begun replacing the broken piece of tubing, Parker cleared his throat.
Terrazas is doing okay out there.
He nodded toward the viewport, not that we could see either man.
It's why I don't second-guess Mission Control often.
Oh. Brilliant response, I know. But I was so surprised by Parker opening up what sounded like an actual conversation that I was afraid to, I don't know, spook him or something.
Sometimes you get so close to a problem that you can't see all the pieces.
He fiddled with the volume knob on the speaker, even though the sounds of Terrazas' and Raphael's breathing were coming in perfectly.
Did Shamoon talk to you?
I nodded, then realized he wasn't looking at me. She did. Saying something more felt like a risk, but it also felt necessary. Thank you.
I would have killed Clemens if he'd tried a stunt like that about Mimi.
I caught myself before I could say more than that. Just because he was talking about his wife didn't mean he had given me permission to do the same. Well, I appreciate it.
Good. She's good. Out of the lung for about an hour a day now.
That's great. What strange reality had I wandered into? Parker was voluntarily talking to me? About his wife? I presume because Nathaniel was in the hospital. It's hard. Knowing he's sick and there's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
Parker compressed his lips and gave this weird, stiff twitch of his neck.
Yeah. But the IAC has access to world-class medical treatment. They'll take good care of him.
So here's a question. Was Parker on the mission because he wanted to make sure his wife had the best possible care? Or was that the story he told himself to feel good about being out here and leaving her behind? For that matter, was the story that I told myself any more believable or true? My brother is visiting to take care of him. That caused Parker to turn and look at me.
The one from California?
See, these moments of kindness leave me so confused. Though I guess someone with a wife and an iron lung wouldn't identify Herschel as the one with polio. I nodded, trying to keep the conversation going as if it could somehow spread out through the rest of the trip. Yeah. Nathaniel mentioned that Herschel was coming out. I just didn't understand why.
Parker snorted. Sounds about right. Mamie once mentioned that she was sleeping better. Only after I asked did it turn out that there'd been a squeaky bolt on the lung that had been keeping her awake. Did she mention it while it was actually a problem? Not a chance.
I laughed, and his eyes widened. That might have been the first time I'd laughed in front of Parker. It was so tempting to say, "See, I do have a sense of humor." But I'm a grown-up, and didn't. Also a chicken, because I was afraid that I'd lose what little rapport we had. I wonder what they say to complain about us.
Well, Parker leaned over the armrest of his seat. One thing I can tell you is that your husband hates...
Nina, EV1, we have a problem.
Raphael's voice cut in, tight and professional. Like a machine, Parker snapped back to attention, slapping the control to pipe Raphael through to the whole ship, even as he answered him. Go ahead, EV1.
Estevan's suit is caught on the ammonia lines. As far as I can tell, the sizing ring bracket between the lower right leg and boot has gotten snagged by the 4F.37 ammonia line bracket. I'm taking a look at it, and I can't for the life of me figure out how it's connected. It's solid. So I'd love to hear the ideas you have.
I grabbed the reference book on the ammonia lines that we'd brought up from the engineering library with us. The large format schematics were still in engineering, and I was willing to bet that Leonard already had it open.
Copy that, Avellino. We'll start looking for solutions from in here.
Parker glanced at me, giving a nod as he saw me leafing through the book for the right page.
Can you confirm for me what your current consumables are?
With CO2 scrubbers, O2 and batteries, I have about 3 hours left.
Terrazas?
There was a staticky pause. I looked up to the viewport, but all it showed were the hard light of stars and the distant blue dot of Earth. Terrazas cleared his throat.
Closer to 2 hours for me.
Understood.
Though Parker didn't say it, I'll bet the same thought went through his head as went through mine. The accelerated consumption was a sign of an inexperienced spacewalker. They exerted more effort just staying still. Parker, though, just kept his calm captain's voice on.
What have you tried so far?
Rotating, shaking, pulling, twisting, cursing.
Excellent technique. How many languages?
He toggled off his mic and switched over to talk to the lab.
Flannery, give me some options.
On one channel, we had Leonard saying,
"Can I get in to cut the T-clamp?"
On the other channel, Terrazas was saying,
"English, Spanish, and Portuguese. Any further recommendations?"
Parker switched back to Terrazas while Leonard was still talking.
Latin is always good for science cursing. You have your emergency shears. Flannery is asking if you can cut the T-clamp.
Raphael said,
"To be utterly honest, I cannot even get a good sense of how the hardware is connected. I'm concerned about putting a hold in Estevan's suit. Can we disconnect the line?"
"Understood. Stand by."
Parker flipped back to Leonard.
"Flannery, you heard that?"
"Yeah. That section is permanently attached. Unfortunately, the best bet is to cut the line. It's depressurized right now, so we wouldn't have to worry about losing more ammonia."
"Tell me how hard the repair will be."
"Not great, but doable."
Leonard sighed.
"Raphael will have a better idea."
Which made sense. Raphael was our engineer, so knew the Niña better than anyone. I kept looking through the manual, but everything I saw confirmed Leonard's assessment that they'd probably have to cut the line.
Copy.
Parker rubbed his hand across his face once and turned to me.
You said we'll have to abandon the Niña if the ammonia system doesn't come back online. No way around that?
If we lose cooling, the ship will overheat before we reach Mars on even our best-case trajectory. I shifted inside my shoulder straps, drifting in a tiny circuit within those restraints. But I don't know all the contingencies for getting the ammonia system back online. He leaned back over to the mic.
Flannery, if they have to cut the line to get Terrazas free, what does that do to our options for cooling?
We've got the ammonia shut down, so we won't vent anything. There should be enough to replace what we've already lost. Between us, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. Give me a minute to run some stuff past Wilbert Schoenhaus over on the Pinta.
Roger. We should work this to the bingo time of 30 minutes before we call it.
Parker leaned back in the command seat and rubbed his forehead again.
Hell. York. Start working course corrections for if we're all on the Pinta.
I nodded, understanding the decisions he was balancing. Under the circumstances, since we could retreat to the Pinta, Terrazas' life took priority over the ammonia system. Thank God for mission control and their flight rules. With flight rules, all the decisions about contingencies had been made ahead of time. It took emotion and quick reactions out of the equation. It gave us the redundancies we needed because we'd thought about how things could go wrong before we got there. And yet, it was bad enough having to simulate leaving someone to die. I shuffled the reference books I'd brought to grab Volume 44B. Mission Control already came up with the single vessel contingency, so... Right, I'll refine it. He nodded tersely and toggled the mic back on.
Avellino and Terrazas, we have to preserve 30 minutes of oxygen, so you have an hour to try to work this before we go with cutting the line.
Roger, we'll keep working the problem out here.
Terrazas answered.
Confirmed. In this thrilling installment, our intrepid band of space adventurers face the wrath of the space tubes. As we listen, our brave hero, Rafael Avellino, prepares to free his hapless sidekick from the wily space tubes.
After that, Rafael muttered something else in Portuguese that made Parker laugh, but his laughter died as soon as he turned his mic off. Parker reached for the switch again as if he were going to call another station, but then pulled his hand back and set it in his lap. Jaw tight, he stared out the viewport and waited, the murmur of Rafael's commentary in the background. Me? I did math. Although there wasn't really that much to do, so I reviewed equations to make sure that I was ready when I needed to plug in the specifics. Leonard's voice buzzed into the room.
All right. I want to go over it again when Rafael and Terrazas are back on the ship. But we're pretty sure that if we lose too much ammonia, then I can make more. Probably. But that's a worst-case scenario, and everyone would be happier if I didn't have to.
Good work. And why do we not want you to make it?
Toxic.